Right, we are back and we're in this elder course in session two, and we're going to start beginning looking at the New Testament.
Yeah, elders in the New Testament. It's interesting that it seems to be just assumed, since they had this Old Testament model of elders leading and elders being an influence, that it's assumed that that's how God's going to continue his directions toward leadership in the New. For instance, we read this in Acts 14. Paul and Barnabas appointed elders for them in each church. This is on their first missionary journey that they were planting these churches, and one after another, these cities, the Spirit was moving, people were coming to faith, churches were being formed. Now, how are these people going to be led? Paul and Barnabas are moving on, and so they appointed elders. Now, we're not told here any of the criteria that went into choosing those elders. But just to note that this is an important beginning to the churches, is that they have
the church
elders
continuing to thrive after Paul and Barnabas move on. This is how the leadership continues.
Right. And Acts 15 is the gathering in Jerusalem, where there was a big question because there was this group that are called now Judaizers, and that they were saying that converts to Christianity had to obey all the Old Testament laws.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided to have a gathering of leaders in Jerusalem to determine that question. What do new believers have to do? And there were the Judaizers who presented their case. They've got to keep the law of Moses. We're connected to that Old Testament powerfully. We've got to tell new believers that they've got to do everything. 630-some laws, I think, that they had to back up the Ten Commandments, including circumcision and, you know, keeping the feast days and et cetera, et cetera. So, well, Paul and Barnabas are brought into sharp dispute because they have been preaching that we're saved by grace through faith, you know, and that there's nothing that's added on to that. And so Paul and Barnabas are appointed, along with some others, believers, note, to go up to Jerusalem to see the apostles and the elders about this question. Now, that's not the way I pictured it. I pictured, you know, Peter, James, and John, and, you know, all of the other elders who were still around at that, or the other apostles who were around at that time, and the apostles are making decisions, and so they discuss this. And anyway, the upshot is James, who is the brother of Jesus, has ascended to a leadership position in the church, and he makes a pronouncement about, you know, no, we're not going to have people do that. We're saved by grace through faith, and gave very limited instructions to new believers throughout the churches that have been planted throughout the Roman Empire by that time. But it just struck me that already in this new church, there were elders in the church in Jerusalem who had some responsibilities.
Right.
Who had some influence. And
they
had
governing over the body that's been formed, you know, after Jesus. Yeah,
they had input. Another one where Titus, one of my favorite people in the New Testament, he takes off, appointed by Paul to, take on these churches that have been planted in Crete. And he says, the reason I left you in Crete was what? That you may put in order what was left unfinished. We're not told what that was. And appoint elders in every town, as I directed you. And so Paul, one of the ways, this is not just the ruling of the church. It's the ruling of the society. And so who's going to be in control in the churches? Well, make sure there are elders in every church. Now we're going to look in just a little bit about how these elders were chosen, what criteria went into who Titus would pick. Now, at this point in the church, the elders are being appointed, you'll notice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I used to kid elders in the churches I served. The last two churches I served, we chose elders by lot, but I would always say, I think we ought to do it the biblical way. I think the pastor ought to appoint them. And, you know, I would say kiddingly, but at this point, that's what's happening. Mm-hmm. Titus is given a list of qualities that he's supposed to look for and choose.
Right.
And we're going to walk our way through that. Because
pick elders based on
right.
that.
And so it's a powerful, powerful a statement of, again, plurality of leadership.
Right.
And that's really, you know, so how chosen? Well, they're appointed. election, some people just get to assume, I suspect, the position of elders. You know, there have been people in ministry that I have dealt with who didn't hold the office, but they were the people I knew I had to talk to.
Right.
Because they had influence within the congregation. And, you know, I can name all sorts of names and some people who had powerful influence. One, you know, I'm at the age where I do a lot of reflecting on my life, and I just wrote one of our elders of the church I served in California and said, you know, you rescued ministry for me. He was somebody who stepped in a very trying time, and he was somebody of influence, and wow, he brought the church along when we were going through a challenging time, because we'd made some very bold decisions about the future, that we were going to relocate, which meant selling the church that people had sacrificed to build, and I was getting the brunt of the criticism of that, and I was getting unsigned letters, and boy, it was not a pleasant time. And so what do I do with that? I went to the elders, right? They're the ones who rule the church, and I know that I am subject to them. But I said to this man, I said, I'm going to be out of here in a year. I said, I can't take this anymore. And the next elders meeting, he said, we've talked about this as elders while you were not here. And he says, we are tonight declaring to me and to my partner, you are our pastors. And they took over. They said, you will not don't open any letters, telephone calls. Yeah. You tell people. They appointed two of the elders to receive all the criticism. Says if you get a call from somebody, you tell them they got to call these people.
Go
to the elders. And, unsigned letters. You don't have a return address. You bring it right to us. We deal with this from now on. And then we knelt and they laid hands on us and commissioned us again to lead through this challenging time. The elders were
beautiful example of them stepping up in that role of leadership and caring for their pastors.
Right, right. And so, you know, there's that plurality of leadership. And the tradition that I have ministered in officially, I have been appointed leader in the church in the sense that, you know, my position as lead pastor is what it was called. Was involved in providing leadership, and we're going to get into various sides of the church later and all that good stuff and how elder roles might differ in that various sizes. But it was also very clear that my life, my doctrine, my character was subject to the elders.
Right, they're given that accountability right. That everybody needs in right. Their life.
Right, and they are there. They're there. Now there are various words that are used in the New Testament that sometimes are also referred to as elder. Elder, the word Greek word is presbyteros. You'll notice the root of the Presbyterian church. That's what their big claim is that they are ruled by elders. Pastor is often a big role in the church, and sometimes that word is poiema or shepherd. In most traditions, the pastor role is not separate from the elders. The pastor is a teaching elder. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that more. And then there's that word overseer, which we're going to look at. Yeah, the word is episkopos, from which you'll notice the root of the word episcopalian, who are not ruled by elders, but they're ruled by a structure where the word episkopos is often translated as bishop. But generally speaking, when we read these words, a general agreement is that they're all referring to elders unless you are in an Episcopal kind of church setting. And so we're going to look at the role of overseer in the church as well as the role of elder. So there are two major passages that talk about what an elder has to be. One, Paul is writing to his son in the faith, Timothy, who has been sent to Ephesus, and he's trying to build the church in Ephesus. Now, you remember that was a place where Paul had to kind of run away from because there was a big riot that the silversmiths were trying to, you know, get the Christians out of leadership in the church and leadership in the city, and he sees the expanding influence, and so Alexander, the silversmith, starts a riot, and Paul is brought out of the city to protect him as a result. And Diana, goddess of the Ephesians, was what they were shouting in the stadium. Several thousand people. And Timothy is sent there to build that church. And
what a hard place to be sent into. He's
very brave. This is a brave man. And so Paul writes to him, and two of the New Testament letters are to Timothy. And in 1 Timothy chapter 3, he gives a list. He says, I want you to appoint elders. You've got to have elders in the church. It's not just you.
Right.
They weren't this church
right.
Have leadership.
Have you burnt out in that situation if he does not?
Right. This is not a one-man show here. And so let's look at chapter 3, verse 1. Now, notice, now I'll read this even though it's on the screen. Here's a trustworthy saying. That's one of the themes of Paul as he's passing on knowledge and information to Timothy. Whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task. Now, the overseer is to be above reproach, faithful to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, even with teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money, and he must manage his own family well. He must not be a recent convert or may become conceited and fall into the same judgment as the devil. He must have a good reputation with outsiders, so he will not fall into disgrace and into the devil's trap. Now, I have to tell you, when I was recruiting people to be nominated, to be chosen as elder in my church, I would have them read that passage, and they would all come back and say, no.
Right, like that.
this is too much. And so what we're going to do in the rest of this session and in the next session is just walk through what this means to be an elder in the church, what elders are, to be this position of influence and leadership within the church. So, first thing to note is that Titus is the other passage. The reason I left you in Crete was that you might appoint elders. Now look at the same list there in many respects. He must be blameless, faithful to his wife, his children believe, not open to the charge of being wild and disobedient. Since an overseer manages God's household, must be blameless, not overbearing, not quick-tempered, not given to drunkenness, not violent, not pursuing dishonest gain. Rather, must be hospitable, one loves what is good. So a lot of the same stuff. He's got to be self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined, firmly holding to the truth, trustworthy message as it has been taught. So this is important. Is what Paul is saying.
Right. Even that ending line there, it's like, so he can encourage others by sound doctrine and refute those who oppose it. Like, it's so important that the people appointed in this position do hold the faith and are firmly in it and are doing the characteristics of the Holy Spirit.
Right, because it's not just leadership as an activity, it's leadership by example that is the reality. And it would be interesting. I don't know what those, where he went to get those folks. it was in the church, but sometimes that's a challenge. I remember years ago I was part of a group within our denomination that was deciding where new churches were going to be planted in the western part of the United States. And Las Vegas at that time, Henderson, just south of Las Vegas, was the fastest growing area in the country. So we decided we got to put a church there. In fact, we ended up planting three churches in that area. And two of them were Korean. One was primarily Anglo, but was multi-ethnic. But I remember the question came up as the Korean churches were growing. We're at that point of establishing a council of elders and deacons mm-hmm. to be part of the leadership. And the question came up, now, can you still have somebody who's an elder who deals cards at one of the casinos?
And there you go, the moral question.
I won't tell you how that all came out, but the question was, okay, what do elders represent to the community inside and outside the church? And so Paul is just saying this is important stuff. And so let's look at some of the things that make that important. Here's the trustworthy saying, whoever aspires to be an overseer desires a noble task. That word aspire means to reach out after, to stretch out, to grasp something. Mm. Basically, what he's saying is you don't just appoint some people who don't want it. They have to desire it. And desire it enough that they know what it's involved and they're ready to go through whatever has to be gone
right.
through.
Even that whole point of reaching after, you know, it's like, look at this list of what they have to be. If they aspire to be an overseer,
right.
it is such a noble task because they're going to be called to be exhibiting faithful to their wife, caring
right.
for their
right.
children, all these things. And it really is something
right.
to reach
yeah.
after because it's hard.
Yeah, and it's challenging. One of my sons-in-law, I have two of them, the one has served as elder in our church, and the one last year was nominated to be elder in his church. He lives in the Seattle area, and they have a huge vetting process to go through. It involves meeting with people in the congregation to get their views on the church and the things that are happening, and in society and in our culture today politically. And it was just a challenge to the point that at one point, he said, I'm not even sure I want this, but he said, I feel called to it. And so, you know, he's an elder in that church today. But it's that idea that, you know, maybe they won't think of it themselves. This isn't like, oh, I really want, I want to be an elder. I want to be an overseer. That can happen. But more often it's, okay, you have the qualities, I think, to be an elder. Would you consider that? And then work with that, with a sense of God's call in your life that you... You know, feel that, yes, this is what I want to be. And I want to be the best one I can. So I'll do whatever I need to do that. So first thing is they've got to aspire to it. Next thing is you've got to be above reproach, or some translations put it blameless. Now, who's blameless? But the word literally means nothing to hold upon or nothing to grab onto. In other words, if somebody wants to critique your life, what can they grab onto that's hidden? The elder is somebody who represents something. Now, that question is, does it mean you've never done anything wrong? Not necessarily. I remember one person... And somebody said, you know, you're a so-and-so, 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 was using some unpleasant language. And this person who was a leader within the Christian community said, oh, you don't know the half of it. I'm so much worse than that. But by God's grace had been transformed. And life had been changed. It was a testimony. But the call is, okay, who are you going to get as elder? It's got to be somebody that is... People can't grab onto something.
Right.
And if they do, it's can be so negative for the church. The first church I served, like I say, we had 60 people when I came there. We grew over a period of time, but we had a businessman in the church, and wow, we needed some businessmen involved in leadership in the church. And so I and others encouraged him to stand for elder. He was chosen as elder, and I started getting telephone calls. Turns out this guy was he constructed houses for a living and owned the business. And I just started getting phone calls from people that felt cheated by him, that he, you know, had started a house but never finished it. The money that was given was used to start something else, and the books were a mess. And I'm thinking, here's this little church in a community that we're trying to lead to Jesus Christ, and all of a sudden there's all sorts of stuff they can grab onto. That says, ooh, it's a real challenge to say, okay, this can't be. And now, blameless doesn't mean that you've never done anything wrong, but within your life in Jesus Christ, are there things that are still being lived out by you that somebody could grab onto as a critique of Jesus' church, his bride? So that's the first one, blameless. Here's one of my favorite. If you want to be respected for your actions, your behavior must be above reproach. Our lives demonstrate we are peaceful, humble, and trusted. It's recognized by others. That should be true for elders.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is faithfulness. Faithful to spouse. The word means resolute in allegiance or affection, loyal and steadfast following. You know, when doesn't mean you've never had to have been divorced again, but today, you know, when God has worked in your life, mm-hmm. Is your characteristic a commitment to your family that is seen, yeah. That people can recognize, so that when the people in the church have challenges, they can look to you as somebody about faithfulness in family life. So that's what the elders are supposed to be. So look at your life. Okay. Next one is self-control, or sometimes it's translated as sober-mindedness. Now, self-control, I repeat in my prayers in the morning. I don't do it every morning, but many, many mornings, I'll just run through the fruit of the Spirit to say, okay, where do I need the Spirit more right. powerfully? So love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, fellowship,
self-control.
And and so that's what I pray for. It's a fruit of the Spirit. So is it seen in you? I like this illustration. Somebody gave self-control. In other words, are you controlled by your mind, not your emotions? In other words, are you controlled by your mind and your faith, not by your passions? And so right. that whole idea of, you know, who's running the show right. in your life.
Right. Is it the Holy Spirit, is Jesus Christ in control in your life?
Or right.
And the pleasures of the world running the ship up
right.
there.
Right. And again, if this is not true, it brings disrepute to the church. And mm-hmm. As well as a weakness to the church, because the elders are supposed to be the places you go to learn and see modeled what the fruit of the Spirit is. So, self-control. Respectable. I like this one. Means orderly, well-disciplined. In other words, it's somebody you look up to with respect. And, I've been privileged to work with some elders that... yikes, you look at their life and you say, I want to be like that.
Right, you just are like, wow, I just respect how you're loving your family, how you're taking care of
right.
people around
yeah.
you.
Yeah. And Alamy puts out these things every once in a while. Mm-hmm. I love that respect, and then you look at all the words around it.
You know, little people, yeah.
yeah
and
honesty,
even respectful and respectable is there, so you got respect
right.
really three times.
Right.
Very large.
Yeah, courtesy, esteem, all of these things are involved in being somebody that people respect. Are you reliable? You know, what's your reputation? Honesty, is that the characteristic of your life and in your business mm-hmm. Dealings? And, elders, this is what it means. And I've been privileged to work with so many. So that's the beginning of looking at what the New Testament says what we are to be. In the next session, we're going to dig into some of the other words that Paul uses to say, this is who you're going to be. So we'll see you then.